Ah yes, Wilder's Pool. A place where the Romans arrived around 100 AD. Built an industrious little town full of rich minerals, glass and bronze work. And then, quite sensibly, they fucked off and left. And yet, you stayed. You took this strategic crossing of the River Mersey, once a thriving hub of trade and industry, and turned it into a rugby ground with a manual scoreboard and a faint smell of piss and disappointment. For over a century, humans gathered there. Not to advance civilization, but to watch Warrington narrowly beat Bradford Northern in front of a defeated man drinking Green Alls bitter in silence. And probably only there because his mother-in-law comes over on Sundays. The Romans built walls to defend Wilder's Pool. You built terraces, a snooker club and a legendary nightclub, ironically called Legends. To just defend yet another Fred Lindup diabolical decision. And now. Gone. Demolished. Replaced with houses. An entire civilization reduced to a cul-de-sac named after someone who once dropped the ball in 1978. Progress, they call it. I call it. Inevitable. This has been a HAL Historical production.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, whatever time you're listening to this nonsense. I'm Rob London. This is What Would Brian Bevan Say? So, with Maypole celebrations in full swing, where are my two primrose-ribboned podcasting prancers? Firstly, he's the oldest polar in town with a hip-hop skip and a statistic. It's Sam Sankey.
Hello there.
And also, to be lifted aloft and paraded through the streets north of the river, yes, our very own Warrington May Queen, it's Dennis Waywell.
All right.
It's 6:30, it's 13 degrees. I have got out of bed this morning. I've got my dressing gown on. I've had a lovely slice of banana bread because it's Mrs. London's birthday. And yeah, the world is well. What else has happened to me? I'll tell you what happened to me this week. I forgot to tell you this. I pocket dialed Steve Anderson by mistake. That's what I did. And I panicked. I looked down at my phone. It was ringing. He picked up. I lost my nerve and hung up on him.
God. It's plenty of conversation to add. You know, now you've read his 293-page bloody coaching manual, you should be able to say, Steve, just remind me what was on page 172. In other news, I've been listening to our own podcast this week, which is unusual. And what I thought was, is that what gave me this idea is because I was looking at who was the commentator for the Warrington game. I thought, he's really good.
He was really good, yeah.
He is good. What's his name? What's his name now? It's Rupert Cox. He was. He's actually born in the UK, but he's lived in Australia. And I thought, he's brilliant, but I couldn't remember his name. And then I thought, I'll stick the captions on the game. And I was listening to the captions, and it said Rupert, but it came up with Robert. And I thought, fucking hell, that AI shit, isn't it? Captions can't really capture exactly what the commentator says. Mm. Anyway, when I was looking at the our podcast, I noticed that the captions struggle on our podcast, which isn't a surprise considering we're talking shite. And there was a couple on there. Now, what do we do with Thulis, spelled Thulus?
So that's the way Sam pronounces it.
I suppose it is, isn't it? Yeah, well, at least you've got an explanation for that, Sam. Whereas Mr. London said at one point, according to the caption, yeah, we could do with a whole elf section on taped heads. So I wonder if you've been looking at what elves play for Warrington have had taped heads, rather.
I could do a section on that next week. I'll put a section together. Elves, I'm just making note of that. Elves with taped heads.
Yes,
okay.
Excellent.
Done for next week. Now, I tell you what, word has spread in Thelwall. Word has got back.
Oh, I see.
To my mother that the chicken was excellent down at the wherever he did it. Where, although there's one lady apparently they're a bit concerned about. I can't remember her name now. She hasn't been seen since.
Oh, that's quite possible.
My mum was questioning where the chicken was cooked because apparently there's no cooking facilities where you are. She's wondering if
Oh,
you're
there are
putting
cooking
70. Oh,
facilities.
are there? She thought you were putting 70 chickens in the oven. And then you know what she said to me then? She said, I'm very proud of Sam. We're all very proud of him. She's never once told me that she loves me.
Right, well.
Right. Well, it's good to see you, boys. It's good to have Hal back as well. Hal did a little historical production there at the start of the pod, but that's all good. But we can't delay this any longer, boys. We need to move on to onto Toulouse Olympique. The team was, you're listening to this AI, Thewlis, Thewlis. Hopewattie, Smith, King, Ashton. In the halves, continued Irwin and Sneed. Front row was Yates, Powell, and Byrne. The back three was Bentley, Crowther, and Captain Curry. Interchange bench was Walker, Sipley, Wood, and Tanganawa. Here's the highlights.
Powell goes to the far side. Short ball, and they're in. It's King. Toby King scores for Warrington. 6 minutes in. Sipley, he offloads the ball in contact. And here they come down the near side. It's Smith. Smith with a bit of footwork. Josh Smith, and he will finish for Warrington. Last tackle here. Sneed kicks it high, more sort of hit and hope that one, under a lot of pressure. Curry takes it, offloads the ball in contact, and this might work out for Warrington. It will. It's Max Wood. Still alive here on the last. They're going to use the hands. Thewlis King. King will reach out and score his second. Tackles to work. Okay, back to hands. Now's Jasson. Jasson will hammer it down. And finally, in the 55th minute of the contest, Toulouse Olympique are over the line. Here's Axel Bott. It's on here. Axel Bott. Oh, he's so tough to stop. In any kind of room that close to the line, the footwork of Oli Ashall-Bott. This is the last tackle, just in front of the 40, as Rouget sends it high. Chases on. Hasn't quite gone as far as he might have hoped. Boselli has it. Slips an unbelievable offload. Then a kick to Ashall-Bott. How on earth did they do that?
Final score, Toulouse 16, Warrington 24. There were two tries for King. Smith, Wood also got over the line. Conversions, Sneed 3 from 4. Penalty also went Sneed's way. Referee was Ian Rush, and the attendance was 4683. Sam, the floor is yours.
Well, it's going to be very difficult here because I only watched the first half with any note because I was delivering 48 cakes and it was a streaming match, so I couldn't record it. So, do you know what? Well, if we come on to the physical Toulouse game in a minute, but after this match, I was feeling very flat about our last three performances, really.
Yeah.
We got off to a good start. We scored a couple of nice tries. They broke a couple of times. Thewlis or Thewlis or Thewlis or Thewlis or Thewlis however AI wants to say it, obviously came back, created a good try and tracked back with an excellent last-ditch tackle. And we went in at half-time, really, in a similar... Toulouse aren't as bad as Huddersfield were, but in a similar position, hopefully to pile on some points in the second half. And once again, we just got into a malaise of mediocrity.
Did you cook the cakes during the first half? Were the cakes in the oven?
No, I started at 10 o'clock in the morning and finished at nearly 4. It was four different bakes. Had to wash down between and start again.
Do you find that, I mean, the whole cake process, Sam, do you feel that you wither in the second period of cake production, or do you keep your levels and standards up all the way through to the end?
Oh, I keep my levels and standards. Other people are eating it. I've got to keep my standards up.
Fair enough.
I do tend to slow down a bit, which is probably what's happening to Warrington.
Tackles, outstanding. Bentley, 48. Curry, 47, Dennis. I mean, you can't grumble at that. However, metres, those two starting props, Yates, just 56 metres. Byrne, even less, 48. I know I keep banging on about it, but even in this game, post-contact metres average gain, we lost by 2 centimetres. Is that right? 2.56 for Wyre, 2.58 for Toulouse. Both teams having issues moving forward down the park. But did you watch it, Dennis? Were you out in your camper van on the side of the cliff?
No, it was a weekend off. Oh. No, Mrs. Waywell had gone to London to the theatre to see the Book of Mormon.
Was it good?
It's quite rude, apparently. It's written
been on
by
a
the
long,
guys
quite
from
a
South
while
Park.
Now, hasn't it? It's been on quite a while, that one.
But, there was nothing controversial about this match, was there? I do think I've made a couple of notes before we get to some of those figures again. Toby King, he's been very dependable this year, I think. I think he's been consistent all the way through. Yeah. Are you in agreement with that? Are we giving him that?
I am in agreement with it, although there does seem to be a little bit of a growing concern that he won't pass to Ashton.
Well, you know, as long as he's got a try on the end of it, does it matter? I mean, you know, makes a kick easier, doesn't it? Smith showed a bit of class, didn't he, with his in and out?
Yeah.
That was a good finish.
Yeah.
So,
and isn't it a better finish when you've got a good commentator?
Yes. Yes. It's the best commentator in, I think we've got, well, third behind Newsom and Wood, I suppose.
I think there's only three. There's Wood, Newsom, and whatever this bloke's called, Cock.
Cox.
They're the three. They're the three for me.
Yeah, so that made it better. I think the only other observation that I've got is I noticed he gave quite a lot of game time to Max Wood this time, and actually got him there. He was out on his feet at one point, I think, but it was good to see that he was left him out there. I think that's what we
he made
all
27
to...
meters and four tackles. Four carries, 27 meters. And 12 tackles. None of them were great. None of them really.
Well, I did actually write some stats down somewhere. I had Sipley, who 10 carries at 8.9 metres. That's good. That's pretty good going.
It's very good. Is he running around on one leg, Sam? I get the impression he's not fit. Something's not right.
Well,
there.
Obviously, he had some time off injured, and he didn't look quite at full tilt when he came back in the semi-final, did he?
Right. Okay.
So it does take a while, no matter how much we Mickey take out of our pack or not. It does take a while to come back up to speed, and after this weekend, they've got a week off for the Challenge Cup final, which. Of course, we would want to be in that final, but given we're not, that break might just come at a good time for one or two of these guys.
And for your cakes.
Sipley included. I could drop some cakes off, couldn't I?
You could. Let's have a listen to Sam Burgess, see what he thought.
Sam, thank you so much for joining us straight after full-time. I read this week you called for some honesty. You had some honest sessions during the week after the Challenge Cup semi-final exit. Did you get what you wanted in this one?
In the first half, you know, I think it sounds dramatic. You know, I think we're honest about our performance last week. We weren't where we needed to be, and we probably haven't been for a couple of weeks, and I think we saw a bit of that again tonight. So, you know, some things in the first half are good, but in the second half, you know, a bit disappointed with that. So, again, you know, we're probably tired. I'd say we're a little bit tired, a little bit of an emotional drain from last week as well. So, happy to get the 2 points, but performance-wise, we need to be better.
Yeah, Sam, well, that win sees you joint second now with Leeds Rhinos, and whilst the Challenge Cup is out the way now, all attentions must turn to Super League, and you've got some healthy fixtures coming up, you know, back-to-back home games against Bradford and Hull FC. Look, mate, there hasn't really been too much talk of Warrington Wolves, but you're certainly right up there with a game in hand. You're in a healthy place though, right?
Well, try not to get carried away with that. I think, you know, we've seen things can change really quickly, so it's important to stay on your game. I think, you know, if we've been totally honest about ourselves, we're not quite where we need to be, but I'm growing to learn that over the course of a season, you've got to manage these dips and flaws in form. But if you can pick the 2 points up along the way, it's very important. You know, we've got a relatively, you know, George Williams, I didn't start Danny Walker today, Kai Taylor-Ray. I've got quite a number of my spine out of the team, so, you know, we're sort of patching things together, and Ewan Irwin's got a lot of responsibility for a young man, so, you know, we're understanding that it's not going to be perfect, but I think we can be a little bit better than we were tonight in the second half.
Sam, you mentioned how draining it this week has been, obviously, with the disappointment of last Sunday and the quick turnaround and the trip down to France. Just give us a bit of an insight behind the scenes of what you do to prepare your team for this kind of fixture where you're heavy favourites coming in but mentally and physically drained perhaps after the Challenge Cup match.
Yeah, it's a real fine line to get enough work done, get them ready to play. I think we just kept things a little bit shorter and a bit more intense on the training field, and you know, we tried to have some fun around our travel and enjoy each other's company in the hotel. But understanding, you know, we're here for 2 points and the other team are going to be after the 2 points as well. So, you know, just a bit of honesty around the situation. You know, I thought we managed it well for most parts. Just I was disappointed with the 18 points in the second half.
Well, well done on the win. I hope you allow yourself a half a glass of Beaujolais this evening, Sam. Well done. Thanks for joining us.
Well done. I might enjoy a full one. Cheers, lads.
Again, I'm kind of in agreement with Burgess. I thought there was this sort of narrative that sort of King had said in his interview that was, oh, you know, we keep dropping off in the second half, we're losing concentration, etc. But I think you have to look a bit deeper than that. I think you have to be asking why they're losing concentration. And I think it's because this pack just whittles away in the second half. But Burgess did kind of mention that. He did say that maybe they were a little bit tired. But I think it's more about strength in the second half than anything else. I don't think we get on the front foot as easily as you pointed out the other week, Sam. Maybe not about size, but it's about power. And I just think and you look at some of those tackling stats. I mean, I'm not surprised Bentley and Curry, and most weeks when the other lad plays, what's the one that missed out this week? The Aussie second
Stone.
One. Stone. They're all just tackle machines. They haven't got any energy left to do anything else. If you're making 48 tackles, you can't be asked to take the ball up.
And to be fair, the person who took his place, Crowther, he was fourth on that list with 27.
Yeah, and Powell, who I didn't really notice, did 33. So
the other thing as well, you've got Tanga Noah, who didn't really carry the ball forward, but he still made 23 tackles. So again, he just, it's all about the tackling, which isn't a bad thing, is it? It's defence.
Yeah, but I just think we're running out of steam.
Yes. Now, I've got to pick up a point of order about this post-match interview.
Oh, yes. Beaujolais.
Beaujolais. They're nowhere near picking Beaujolais. Beaujolais is over by Lyon. The Languedoc there.
We've got Sam as the wine expert. We've got Mrs. Waywell as a wine expert. And I was going down an escalator yesterday and I thought, Beaujolais? Why would he be drinking Beaujolais? What would he be drinking?
He's 300 miles away from
what
Beaujolais.
What should he be drinking down there?
Languedoc, like maybe a nice Grenache. Oh, a nice Grenache blend.
Right, yes. How will that come out on the AI? Grenache.
Dear. I didn't see too much of this. First of all, I woke up 20 minutes late, only to turn the Australian stream on to German PGA women's golf, which I was quite enjoying. And I thought, oh, this just must be me. So I had a bit of fiddle around with it, and lo and behold, then it came on, and I think we were 6-0 up at the time. But then I noticed on the What Bevan group, they've all obviously got dodgy fire sticks because they were watching women's German golf as well. I must say that it was the contrast of focus and concentration on some of those girls on the PGA Tour compared to our back line, with the, quite a difference.
Which one did you fancy? Helga?
Not being drawn into this. It's my birthday week, Dennis.
I know. I've nearly had him twice. Just making note.
So that was one thing. I also thought, on another point, that of all the absence we've had from George Williams so far, I thought this was the match where he probably would have been more beneficial. You know, when there's a bit of space out there on the park, you don't want Williams running at you. So I thought we really missed Williams also in this game. The play of the ball. I mean, was it last year where they were obsessed with the play of the ball? Well, that's gone now. I mean, I've never seen so many atrocious play. I don't know where even you start with those play of the balls. They're jumping over it. They're playing it before they get up. They're walking forward. I mean, the whole thing was a mess, but that seems to have been forgotten now. We have no play of the ball issues at all.
I know it's been a hobby horse of mine for ages, but when the rules say put the ball, say place or drop the ball on the floor and heel it back, and then what they actually do is anyone who does put the foot on it and heel it back, if they even stumble a touch forward, they give a penalty against them.
Yeah, you're almost best not doing it.
Just before we go off this, I look at our props, and actually, all of them are. I think this comes. I think our problem. They're all right. None of them are bad, but we're lacking a standout. Now, if you put in a 28-year-old Adrian Morley into that lot, you could lose any one of the players, and we'd be twice as good.
Right.
Just with him. Oh. It doesn't really matter who you lose. And with the back rowers, Holroyd, Stone, Crowther, Bentley, Tanganua, you put a 28-year-old Ben Westwood in that mix, and it massively improves our pack. Just one standout with these workmen, reasonably good players around them. Oh. And I just wonder, are we just one front rower and one second rower away? Is it that we just got a lot of good team men there and no actual standouts?
How many would Wigan want? I've always said this. That's all you need to do. At the boardroom, at the start of the year, boys, sit down, be honest with yourselves and just say, would this lot get in the Wigan team? And the answer every year, until you get seven in, is you ain't going to win the competition. I've got the second half results here just to see if we are falling away in the second half. I'll read them out to you. These are just Super League games. Warrington 6, St Helens 14. Warrington 13, Wakefield 14. York 12, Warrington 16. Warrington 40, Castleford 0. Leeds 18, Warrington 10. Warrington 18, Lee 6. Catalans 28, Warrington 12. Warrington 15, Wigan 6. Uddersfield 4, Warrington 6. And Toulouse 16, Warrington 6. So we've won 8 games. However, second halves, we've won 5, we've lost 5. Our first half for and against is 186 against 44. We're winning 81% of the points in the first half. Second half, we're at 142, comparison 118. We're at 55%. However, if you take out that ridiculous Castleford game, we are down to 43% of the points we're scoring in the second half. So there is a drop-off. We've definitely got a drop-off.
Completely, and those couple of games that you mentioned that sounded good, Wigan and Lee, were both at home. I actually think it's not. I agree with you, the second half we are not performing as well, but I actually think it's a home and away thing as well.
Right,
at home we are 5 out of 5, and a massive 188 points to 48. Against, whereas away, we've won 3, lost 2, but we're 140 conceded 114.
Right.
So it seems a big difference the moment we're going away from the Halliwell Jones at the minute. And it's showing up the further the game goes on when we seem to be dropping off, as you've already alluded to.
I mean, Dennis is a bit against this because I think Dennis wrote on WhatsApp another clinical first half performance. I mean, Dennis is just on for early marks, aren't you? Go home early.
That's exactly.
It's a Friday. It's 3 o'clock. We've done enough. We've put enough in. Let's go to the pub.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, the thing is you're not going to get a team playing well all year round. So why fucking bother?
No.
Just get the job done.
Harlem Globetrotters did.
Did they?
Never dropped off.
Did they? No, but I think that was fixed, like bloody wrestling. So, but, you know, I think really they got the job done. And it was just like, yeah, it's like going to work. It reminded me of going to work, get the job done. And then, like, you know, who gives a shit what goes on in the afternoon? It's just
looking at productivity levels at work and our revenue stream this week. And we do actually have quite a good Friday afternoon. We have quite a bit of revenue comes on Friday. However, it tends to be jobs performed on Thursday that aren't invoiced to Friday. And I was looking, and actually the peak day for productivity is Tuesday, but nearly 50% less on a Friday compared to Tuesday. National figures tend to show. So,
So we meet national figures. We're second in the league. We're trundling along. This is just really being overcritical now, isn't it?
Play the game on the weekend. Yeah. Suspend the game. Play the second half on a Tuesday. That's what we need to do, and we'd be fine. So. Yeah. Other Super League round 11 results: Huddersfield 18, Saints 26, Wakefield 58. Where did Catalans go? Catalans 10, Wigan 24, Leeds 4. York 18 were pipped by Castleford 24, Lee 16, Ulkayar 20, and Bradford won a tight game over Hull 16-14. It leaves the table with Saints out on top on 18 points, Leeds and Warrington both on 16, we've got that game in hand, Ulkayar on 14, as to a Wakefield and Wigan. Then we drop down to 10 with Lee and Catalans in 7th and 8th. Probably forget the rest. Hull, Castleford, York, Bradford, Toulouse, Huddersfield. Will be interesting to see what order they finish in. But I think now, Sam, that top six really, unless Hull do something miraculous, it's coming from the top eight, right? Lee and Catalans might sneak in. But I think we know pretty much the top six, nearly, apart from those two.
Yeah, I agree with that. Lee, over the last two or three years, have put runs together.
They did start poorly, Lee. That I think if you probably look at the last six games, Lee would be right up there. Maybe. They certainly have more points. They lost a couple early on.
Yeah. And similar with Catalans, it would be interesting with a new coach whether they can get it together. But they seem so up and down. I mean, so when you look at their results as a whole, it's so disappointing that we got a good hiding over there for about 30 minutes spell, didn't we? They actually tore us apart for 30 minutes.
Cartwright, Hull to the south of France. He must be livid. He must be absolutely livid. Yeah. Poor guy, hey? Yeah. Oh, what a hardship.
You can pick up some Beaujolais as he drives down.
Do you think he could turn Catalan's fortunes round then? Because looking at that, you've got Wakefield.
Napoleon couldn't turn the French round. There's no chance. You know what they're like? That's just the way they are, isn't it? Just the way they are. They'll get up for Bastille Day and that'll be it. Do you think there's an equivalent Mr. Sankey down in the south of France delivering cake like Marie Antoinette? Do you think that goes on down there? He could call for Sam. The players are on it. They are starving. They only have bread to eat. And send for Mr. Well, let's them eat cake. And Mr. Sankey can go down there and deliver. No, okay, forget it. Masterman game. Sankey and Waywell are now on two each in the correct pinned positions. The combined total is also on two. Mr. London has gone out to three all of a sudden as the table comes into shape. Yes, that's a nice three.
Who have you got there then?
Oh, I'll have to open another sheet. I think I've got Catalans. I can't remember who else I've got. I don't think any of us have got towards the top, But I've sneaked three. It's that bottom order, that Bradford, Toulouse, Huddersfield, York keeps changing a little bit. And
I mean, this is quite a, if you were ever tuning into this podcast, this is so cryptic, they would have a fucking clue.
Yeah, well, we don't like you listeners. They can all fuck off. based on the current standings, the eliminators would see Warrington play Wigan and Hull KR play Wakefield. Saints and Leeds would have the week off. So, very early days there.
You're going early with that, aren't you? You're going very early. Mm,
Mrs. London said this morning.
Oh.
Before that, John Craven's News Round.
Tevita Pangai Jr., the prop who signed for Wire in the close season, only never to actually play for the club, has now signed for Hull Kingston Rovers. According to Warrington's social media, Warrington have received a transfer fee from the Robins. Now, you pointed out, Sam, that that transfer fee is a bottle of squash. What else was it? Something else you said. Something in his, he had some inside information. Something about,
was it a couple of pies? A couple of pies and a bottle of squash
we've got for him. Well, he's going to rip it up there, isn't he, for sure now? You watch. They'll get him fit. Come the playoffs, he'll get a ball out, 2 minutes to go, and they'll win a match. He's my favourite name, I think, ever. Tevitai Pangai Jr. I really like the name. Wish he'd played for us.
But yeah.
Nothing? Nothing on that at all?
No, absolutely.
You're our props expert.
I know, but I didn't know this topic was coming up, so I'm a bit sort of caught out. Well, it's a big bopper, isn't it? And we haven't got a big bopper, as according to Sam. They're just loaded. I mean, Sam's changed his tune on props since last week because he was going, oh, we've got some nice props, this, that and the other. You're calling them all sorts last week.
That's exactly what I'm saying. They're nice. They're all right.
Yeah, but last week you were saying they were shit and you were calling them...
What's that?
You know,
there was a huge edit last week. I had to take out a 10-minute rant that I did, never to be seen again.
Yes, you left a massive gap in as well when we was dead air on the podcast, and you just thought, oh fuck it, I'll leave that in.
No, that was when you spoke about Sharon Shortle. There wasn't.
No,
massive
it was
gap.
There was one before that.
Oh, was
as
there?
Well,
right, fair enough.
Yes, I don't think we had anything to say. Let's go back to talking about something else, like, because I think rugby's getting a bit boring, isn't it?
Oh.
I've got an idea for another podcast. If we win, right, I've got another idea for
a
podcast.
There's no point in this idea, then.
Yeah, well, yeah, no. But if we did, well, something to look forward to. I thought what we could do is we could start a food podcast where we each, every week, we go out and we try a cuisine, a different cuisine, local to our area, and we all come back and compare and contrast. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a good idea. I always overorder. We went out for Thai on the weekend. I think I sent you a few pictures. We had nine main dishes, and there was only four of us, and two of those were children. So, anyway. George Williams has undergone neck surgery, with Sam Burgess confirming the Warrington captain faces a minimum 16-week recovery period. Burgess added the best-case scenario would see Williams return around mid-September. The elimination playoffs start on September the 19th and 20th.
He's not going to come back. He's not going to be fit, is he? It's not the sort of thing that you can train with, I imagine, the neck.
Sam did send a picture on WhatsApp this morning of George Williams in bed, and he's covered in whatever he's covered in, umbilical cords and God knows what else, to which Dennis wrote back, Jesus, how many wires are coming out? Now, I read that as he'd actually had a sex operation, but it turns out you're referring to the wires all over his body, Dennis. But I did see it at 6:05, having come out of a lovely dream, so it was probably all related.
Is that after the other news of the picture I sent you about the coach getting another contract for another 2 years?
I didn't have the energy to type that in the script. I tried.
Do you not want to talk about it? Let's talk about it. Come on.
Let's have a talk about it.
So, I mean, so you said...
Well, news from... Are you going, Mrs. London? Happy birthday, darling. Happy. She does exist, honestly.
Wish her a happy
there,
birthday.
There was someone. Dennis yeah. says happy birthday. She said, fuck
no
off.
No response.
It's gone.
No response.
It is a little bit like, yeah, Psycho when he talked to his mother, isn't it? It is getting a little bit like that. Oh, got a giggle then. You like that, do you? I love your dress, but oh. your skirt, by the way, today. It's beautiful. It's lovely. Absolutely gorgeous.
Is he dressing Master London up now in dresses just to create a shadow? Going past.
I'm basically just trying to deflect from the Sam Burgess breaking news. That's what this is all about.
I know, but you've brought it up again. So,
Oh, I've lost my headphones. Where have they gone?
Well, while he's doing that, what do you think about the Sam Burgess news, Sam? Are you all over it?
If true, I'm neither happy or sad. I'm just feeling a bit
indifferent.
It doesn't excite me. Indifferent.
Well, that's isn't it. Where's the progress been?
Well, I think the progress will or will not come by the end of this year. But the evidence so far says that we're just okay.
Why re-sign him if he has re-signed? Why re-sign him based on? There's no evidence of progress. Where's the progress? Yeah. We won the Locker Cup at the start of the year.
We've won some silverware point. Then. Yes.
We've won the Locker Cup. How long is this apprenticeship, Dennis? This is strikes me as if he's, you know.
Well, the way I look at it as well is that he came in and we called the Burgess effect. Last year was absolutely shite. They brought in Steve McNamara, sidekick Steve, and we started to win it. Now, how much can be attributed to Sam Burgess and how much to sidekick Steve? You take sidekicks, I can say that a few times, kind of sidekick Steve away. And then, what happens then? It's a bit of a risk, I would have thought. I mean,
is this, well, I mean, my brother texted me last night and said, you know, he wasn't particularly happy about it, but he did write in his text. He said, if the deal is closed, can we sign a better assistant? Like, is it all about signing an assistant now? Is it, I mean, does he need another sidekick of sidekick Steve's ability? Is that what it's all about? Is Lee Breers possibly the antidote?
That's interesting.
I mean, we had Breers on the pod, right? And he said he didn't want to be a first team coach because he likes jumping out of cupboards and frightening players. Doesn't have the right attitude. But he's a very good number two.
It might be about the managerial mix, mightn't it? He might be good at two-thirds of it and need someone else to do it. Or it might be that we've 3 years experience under his belt, he will get better and better, like a fine wine.
A bloody blue nun with the top off in a heated corner at the moment.
Well, so we're all sat on the fence.
No, I'm not sat
on
the
Rob,
fence.
I've never been on the
fence with this. I'm sorry, but I've never seen why we brought him in. Such a novice coach we brought in who's now had a 3 year apprentices and been given 2 more years. Show me the progress. Show me the progress.
And you know what? As much as it occasionally galls me to say you are right, you are right in that you've never been on the hype train, have you?
No.
You did, to be fair, you did say at the end of season one that it had gone better than you expected, but you were then expecting it to fall off. So, yeah. To be fair, you've been very correct with that. I tend to be in agreement with Dennis. We have been generally better this year. We've taken advantage of a relatively easy start, but I'm not sure whether that improvement is because we should be winning those games against lesser teams, or whether it is through coaching. The next 7 or 8 games will tell, because we've got a tougher run coming up.
We have got the most affluent board in rugby league.
We've got so
much money behind us. Let's not forget, we're not Castleford. We are Warrington. We are underperforming based on the clout that we have. And we continue to underperform. we're not under financial strains like so many other clubs, and we still every year. Where's the pro? I honest to God, set your standards higher. Look at, would Wigan be re-employing him? No. Would Saints be re-employing him? No. Would the Roosters be re-employing him? No. Would Manchester City? No. Or if you look at the teams that aspire to be at the top of divisions, no matter what sport it is, there's no way this guy would be signing another contract now. He'd be signing it possibly at the end of the year if he turned things around. No one's coming knocking for Sam Burgess. No one. Mm.
But again, I think you might have hit the nail on the head. Go back 20 years, maybe a touch longer, 25 years. The club was around the bottom of the league in a dilapidated stadium with significant financial pressures. Fast forward to a new ground, a new board, Simon taking full control, other directors coming in, good management. We are now a regular top six, top four team. Mm. But we've been that for, well, since Tony Smith's second year, probably. Yeah. So it's that last step. Where are we going to get the extra? We're scoring 80% on an exam. Great, we're scoring 80%. When are we going to get to 100%? When are we going to get to outstanding? And that's what we're missing, that last step.
We came close to winning it under Tony Smith. When Tony Smith came in, we were a professional club for quite a while. And then they got, I think he said it himself, they got sick of his voice in the end.
Mm.
Let's not forget Steve Price got to the grand final in his first year at Warrington.
Yes.
Mm. Sam Burgess didn't. You know?
Mm.
Price took us to Wembley and won at Wembley. Sam Burgess hasn't. Yet we sent Steve on his way, didn't we?
Yes. Mm. Ultimately.
Mm. Got any banana bread left?
It seems all but certain Australian Brodie Croft has signed for Wire. There had been speculation Warrington were one of a number of clubs in both Super League and the NRL interested in signing the 28-year-old. Croft has now put pen to paper, we believe, on a 3-year deal to move to the Halliwell Jones from 2027. Mm. Be closer to his kids, right? Where is he living, Sam? Is he sort of...
I don't know where he's living, but my assumption is when he's moved over from Salford, they've kept the same house. And so he must be commuting.
It's hardly a trek either way, is it, really? Like, it's hardly a matter. Like, if your commute's under an hour for work, you're doing all right, as a professional?
In miles, it's not far, but it's a shitty drive over that
is
bit.
Yeah. Is that farm still in the middle on the M60?
Yes.
It's still there.
Yeah. What's your radius for delivering cakes, Sam?
I've delivered them down to London. But I was going there anyway.
You were delivering to London?
No, I was going to London anyway.
This is the level. This is the difference in standards. I was thinking Brody. I thought, what famous Brodies are out there? And then it came to me.
Chief
Brody, Sam. Excellent. So we're going to have a little Chief Brody Warrington quiz, if that's all right.
Okay. Oh, hello. Go on.
This might need editing. We've got six questions before you lose interest.
Six.
We'll start with question one.
Who's Chief Brody? Oh, yeah, Jaws.
In the opening scene in Jaws, a girl takes her clothes off and runs into the sea. Which of the following would Warrington fans most likely take their clothes off for and run into the water after? A. Jenna Brooks. B. Tanya Arnold. 3. Sharon Shortle. Or D. Dave Wood's ex-wife.
Ooh, that's a tough one. Has Dave sent you them pictures of his ex-wife?
The answer is none of the above. It's 2026, not 1975. That question was disgraceful, outdated, and deeply misogynistic. Anybody answering A, B, C, or D should report immediately to What Bevan HR on Monday morning. So you've got that one out of the way. Question two. Which is statistically more dangerous at midnight? Swimming off Amity Island or walking down Bridge Street?
Mm.
Statistically, Bridge Street, I would expect more incidents happen on Bridge Street.
Point
maybe not
Sam.
Quite as serious.
Point yes. to Sam. Swimming off New England, a New England beach where Jaws is supposed to be, the odds of being killed by a shark at midnight are roughly 1 in 16 million. Warrington Town Centre, approximately 1 in 4 people have witnessed a violent or sexual offence on a Friday or Saturday night. Question 3. Based on the average weight of a pizza twist served at the Halliwell Jones, how many pizza twists would it take to equal the weight of Jaws? Mm. Dennis has put his head in his hands.
How much does it weigh, Jaws?
Well, I'm not telling you. That's part of the equation. You've got to work out what. I mean, if it was as an ITV quiz, I'd basically give you the weights of both. But this is BBC One, BBC Two, sorry. So this
is is it
2,000?
2,000 pizza twists.
I'll go higher than that. It's miles higher than that.
Yeah, yeah. Dennis has won. It's estimated that Jaws is 200,000. And pizza twists weigh 220 grams. It's 11,363.63 pizza twists. So, when Chief Brody first sees the shark, he turns to Quinton Hooper and famously says, "You're going to need a bigger boat." If Warrington sign Brody Croft, what will Sam Burgess need bigger in 2027? A bigger earring for Carl Fitzpatrick's ego. B, bigger props. C, a bigger taxi to fit Burgess's suitcase in to take him to Manchester Airport. Or D, a bigger playing manual than Steve Anderson's.
D.
Dennis, I'll give you a point for that, D. Yeah, Dennis, this is it. Now, of course, I couldn't believe this. Of course, Dave Lee's Travis has a strong connection to Steven Spielberg's movie Jaws, and in particular, Chief Brody. What is their connection? Any ideas, boss?
They'll eat the same breakfast. Was Brody eating cornflakes?
Oh, I am giving a point to Sam. Chief Brody's family are shown during the film in a manic breakfast table scene surrounded by orange juice, toast and cereal boxes. And of course, as we all know, Dave Lee Travis's nickname was the Hairy Cornflake. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
That is good. He deserves to win.
And this is kind of philosophical. It's the last question. There's no right answer to this. I just want to get your opinion on the signing of Brody Croft. If Warrington do sign Brody Croft, what will become more common in 2027? Chief Brody asking people to get out of the water, or opposition fans doing the Wigan Walk at 60 Minutes because of Brody Croft's talents? What are we thinking of the signing, Sam?
I'm thinking it's a good signing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot will depend on who is. A lot will depend on our pack, but also who is partnered with. And I'm guessing that they're going to hope it's Irwin,
not Hooper,
and Croft,
not David, Hooper. Dreyfus.
Is it Dreyfus?
He's still alive. Roy Sheeder, who played Brody Croft, played Chief Brody. He died in 2008.
No.
Robert Shaw.
Is that the same guy as Roy Schneider, just for AI?
Yeah. And Robert Shaw played Quint. They don't really pronounce the T in the film. They say Quinn, but it was actually Quint was his name. He died in 1978 at just the age of 51.
Just after the film?
Jesus.
Fucking hell. Every fucking time. Can I just say, at first with this little quiz, I thought when you said Brody, I thought we were talking about the professionals with Bodie.
Yeah.
But
that's Bodie.
He's actually high on the try scoring chart as well, isn't he? So I think he would be, it's a good addition. I think he's about third or fourth, I think, this year on that. Sam's looking. Look at him now. Look at him. First time he's done fucking statistics.
Is it again the case of we've offered him 3 years and no one else did? We like doing that, don't we? We like Tanganawa 2 years. We like extending contracts. Sam Burgess 5 years.
Yes.
Quite like.
Yeah, well, I was surprised he was 28. So. 28's not bad, is it?
Well, he didn't work out at Melbourne, did it? It didn't work. He was at Melbourne. He was supposed to step in for Cooper Cronk, and it didn't work out. Mm. He wasn't up to scratch, and then he came to Salford and blitzed it. I don't know what they feel about him. I haven't watched... I don't know who he is at all, so I watched the Leeds Wigan try. I watched the Leeds try to see if he had a anything on that one. He threw a huge forward pass on the play before, which wasn't picked up, and then Leeds scored in the corner. It's more shit refereeing. So it was about a yard forward. Everyone shouts forward, but it was waved off and Leeds scored in the corner. So that's all I've seen of him. So I'll start watching him now. Maybe report back in 6 weeks. See what we think.
Okay.
Oh, I forgot about this. He played at Brisbane for a couple of years. I forgot he'd gone to Brisbane. First reserve.
That would have been a long drive to Salford for his kids.
How do you think that family settled in when they'd come from Brisbane to the shores of the Manchester Ship Canal?
Oh, well, wait and see, eh? Wait and see what happens. Mm.
The big boys are here, we're now into the top 10. Kicking off the final third of this countdown is Matt King in 10th place. He was signed from Melbourne for the 2008 season, and the centre made a blistering start, scoring a gorgeous try on debut against Hull FC. Things went south for King soon after though, and he became a target for fans' anger before restoring their faith in him with some excellent performances in 2009. In 2010, he was named in the Super League Dream Team in a year that saw King score 20 times and lift the Challenge Cup for the second successive season. A player with a real liking for a big moment, who can forget that skillful last-minute winner at Hull FC, just one of the 66 tries the Australian scored in his 105 Wyatt appearances. He signed for South for 2012, but remains the best centre I have seen in my time of watching Wyatt. In 9th is prop forward Mike Cooper. He made his debut as an academy product in 2006, and within a few years had nailed down a place in the side. Between 2010 and 13, Cooper was remarkably consistent and part of one of the best crop of forwards in the club's recent history. It was no surprise when NRL side St George came calling and signed him for 2014, but this was not to be the end for Cooper as he returned to Wyatt in 2017. He won the club's Player of the Year award in 18 and was instrumental in the Challenge Cup win in 19. Arguably his best season came in 2020 though, when his love of a late offload and his determination and grit came to the fore, playing 80 minutes four times that season and making the Dream Team as a result. A sour exit between him and Darryl Powell came in 2022, but overall he made 272 Wyatt appearances.
Daniel there, number 10, Matt King, number 9, Mike Cooper. I did sort of look at what's missing now. We've got 8 places left for Daniel to fill. He's not got the Monaghans in there yet.
Nope.
He hasn't got Lee Brears in there.
Nope. Brett Hodgson.
Oh, he hasn't got Adrian Morley.
No.
So are you using your mastermind tactic here to try and work out what's left?
Working back. Mm. And I thought, I wonder if he's put Chris Hicks in. Chris Hicks was in 15th. So, surprising Cooper's got in the top 13. I mean, you know, Warrington lad and all, but was he really that good?
I felt, to go back to our hobby horse last 2 or 3 weeks, I thought that when in his first spell, he was quite Philbin-like. Good lad, local lad. And then off he went to the NRL, which was a little bit of a surprise. And it was almost like he went a boy, came back a man. type of thing, and he was a completely different.
No, he didn't. But, he came on for like 12
But whatever
spells.
It was, training wise or standards wise or experience wise, he came back a better player. And in his second stint, I thought he was very, very good for a period of 2 or 3 years. I think Daniel said, I think he got into the Dream Team 1 year, you know. And whilst it's not NRL standard, it still takes some doing to get into the Team of the Year.
I had a Matt King wig.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I think I wrote this down. I was going to ask you, you know, when we've been talking about where you spend your money, you know, when you bring in players in and stuff, I think he was one of those really top players at the time that we brought in. He was like, you know, would be a marquee player, I suppose. And then I started thinking about, you know, when we always go on about it, about where you'd spend your salary cap and money, I would spend it on centres. So I was wondering where you would spend your, you know, highest amount of salary or so on what position you think would benefit the most.
In terms of our current team or just generally?
Just generally, I was just wondering where you would spend it, because I think centres, you know, you get a big, fast centre, you know, scoring tries. No. I think it's one of the, I don't know, it's just like gets that momentum, I think. I think
in the modern game, the fullback is becoming more and more the key to the guy who's going to overlap, the guy who's going to take the pass from and make the extra man. And bringing the ball out of defence. We mentioned Hodgson just a few minutes ago. He was like having an extra half back on the pitch, wasn't he? He was a bit of class, and I think a star half back, a star full back. If you're going for a marquee player.
Danger money, though, isn't it, this year? Because it's the year of the fullback injuries, isn't it? Everyone's injured in the fullback.
I mean, I think you could look at this based on the Jaws film. You know, you've got Brody Croft, Chief, you know, out there. You've got Quinn, who's got the boat. He's steering the ship. He's probably your fullback. And then you've got Hooper, who is the scientist. He's kind of your technician in the halves, right? Right. Yeah. But I don't think any of those really amounted to actually catching the shark. I think if you look back at the film, it's Brody's wife back on the shoreline, looking after the kids, keeping the fires burning. She makes him sandwiches before he goes out on the boat, etc. I see her as the CEO. So I think you put your money into a decent CEO. I think if you've got a man at the top that people respect and people all look up to, I think you're halfway there. You're saying.
Interesting. Now, you say that, though. You say she was back at home keeping the fires burning. If you were ever to read the book, she has an affair with...
So she's like... I'll cut that out.
Richard Dreyfuss are doing the dirty behind Chief Brody's back. Yeah.
Sorry, are we still talking about...
Oh, Samuel, I see you're running another one of your scrapyard workshops. Oh, what is it this time? Is it how to avoid a difficult Gina Brucas question by saying that you're due at the nursery pickup in 20 minutes?
No, Ralpho, this is important. We're holding an educational seminar on when and when not to use the captain's challenge.
Oh, it's utter shit. Rag and bone my ass.
Math, steady on that for. It's an important part of the modern game.
Modern game? Modern game? Oh, Samuel, by the time they stopped the match, replayed the footage 12 times and zoomed in on a blurry screenshot of someone's elbow hair, I've aged more than Fitz's LinkedIn profile picture.
Technology, therefore, is improving.
Oh, yes, I'm sure it is, but it's not reached rugby league as yet. I mean, the last replay I saw had less clarity than a than a television footage from a burglary in Busey in 1986. Oh, besides, Samuel, every captain's challenge now takes longer than Professor Broomhead ordering a Toby Carvery.
The referees need time to analyse the evidence.
Oh, do you mean when the video referee spends 10 minutes longer looking for the grounding than the time team excavating Roman pottery?
Anyway, that's why we're introducing guidelines, Ralphor.
Guidelines? Oh, go on then, Summer. Enlighten me.
Rule one. Only use the captain's challenge when when you're certain.
Okay, so don't ask Danny Walker.
Rule two, remain calm and composed.
Well, that rules out Stefan Ratchford waving his arms around like a man who hasn't got a nose for using his walkie-talkie.
Rule three, trust the process.
The process? Oh, there's less process than when the Fletcher Street turnstiles tried to let in a crowd of over 3,500.
The bunker reviews wrap up every angle.
Oh, Samuel, you're dirty old man.
No, Ralpho. We've got recordings looking at every aspect of the game now.
Oh, yes, yes, I see all three of them. One film through a camera needing a cataract operation. One film from the top of Winter Hill. And another seemingly recorded on a Nokia 3210.
Oh, well, perhaps the sport does need better equipment.
Yes, too right, Sammy. We've got marquee players earning six figures and they're reviewing knock-ons using the visual quality of a Crime Watch reconstruction recorded on a Betamax tape.
Besides, Ralphie, this workshop should help speed things up. I've asked Joe Philbin to take notes.
Oh, tackle sacks. Besides, Sammy, speed things up. Oh, the only thing moving quickly during a captain's challenge are the fans heading to the bar and a pizza twist before the decision comes back 20 minutes later inconclusive. Oh, if they really want to save time, Samuel, perhaps the referee should simply stop giving the wrong decision in the first place.
Hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
The sitcom. We've been talking so much about Jaws, I'd forgot all about the sitcom for a moment. Just remind me, what were we on this week?
Jesus Christ.
Oh, aye. Captain's Challenge. Captain's Challenge. So, was this a case of True Life copying art, or art copying True Life? Mm, because it felt like it went on forever.
He's cutting them down this year.
And was inconclusive in the end.
You want to hear a series with mutiny on the HJ with Price when he was sailing down the Manchester Canal? They were like 9.5-minute episodes.
God, yeah, I remember that. Jesus.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's
Little Dan.
Good afternoon.
Can I help you, sir?
Yes, I would like some deodorant, please. Ball or aerosol? Neither. I want it for my armpits.
Right then, welcome back to Tackle Gags, the part of the show where rugby league once again proves that no other sport on earth can take a simple idea and completely fuck it up. Because in this game, it's going to be like a circus. We might as well enjoy the clowns. That's my thoughts.
Oh, see what he did there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This week, I want to bring up, and I've had this written down for quite a long time now, shirt numbers.
Oh,
so
yeah.
just so happened, I watched a bit of the NRL, and I noticed that they still use positional numbers. And as a casual watcher of the Australian game, I was quite pleased to see the ease that I was able to make an assessment of what players were playing in what position. And then sort of like, you know, contemplating their performance at the position that they're in. Because I don't really know the players and stuff like that. So it was actually really interesting.
Yeah. Good idea.
Yeah, it's a brilliant idea. But the sport and positional number is... Oh, sorry. I think the sport invented it, this position, this numbering, basically, because that's what it was all about, wasn't it? It's 13 players on a pitch. What the bloody hell are they doing? So that's why we sort of put them there. Yeah. But yeah, because the modern game wants to become marketable, we've gone to this sort of like, you know, squad numbers, which means
how many people are walking in the Warrington shop and going, can I have such and such number because it's Geordie Crowther? Honestly, like... It's pathetic.
Geordie's son. Geordie's son's probably even got Sipley on his back.
Oh, God.
I mean, I've written down, it sounds great in theory, but except that Super League players are not exactly global superstars.
No,
they're not going to have...
It's not the NBA, is it? For fuck's sake.
No.
Oh,
signature God. Football boots and like sponsorship off Netflix.
1 to 13. I wouldn't even give... You know, 1 to 13, I wouldn't give the subs any numbers. Give them, and in fact, they have to wear the same four shirts. Cut down on the washing. They don't fit.
Yes.
Well, that's, you know, that's the one you take out of the bag and that's the one you wear. I'd also bring it in. When I played football, every week they gave the man of the match, we voted as a team, and someone got a voucher for a pie down at Shakespeare's Pies in Manly. In the 7 years I played, I never won the pie voucher once. Worst player had to take the kit home and wash it. Every weekend, Mrs. London in the washing machine, washing again, throwing abuse at me. Up your game! Oh.
Anyway, most fans still identify props by the big lads with taped knees and blowing out of their arse after 10 minutes. So Super League has managed to create the worst of both worlds. Numbers mean fuck all in a sport where basically your average viewer struggles to follow. So let's have a fix on this. So this is going back to my tackle bags. I've been thinking about this. What we could do, if we're going to continue with this modernization, why not introduce QR codes? on the back of the shirts. That would weigh, it would interact with your phone, and you could bring up a whole lot of information about the player. You could bring up the salary, their player performance, the statistics, the barber shop that they went to, because you like that, Rob. You want to know where Bentley goes.
I'm really on board with this idea. And like players like Kai Taylor-Ray, it'd be really hard to like get his QR code because he's moving so quick.
Yes.
Whereas Sam Powell, you could nail him from 400 yards.
I was thinking that they might work with your glasses, you know, your sunglasses, interactive glasses.
I haven't worn those since the incident.
I was just thinking about it. We could do some video reels as well, so that you could sort of like say that. Although Tyrone May's video reel, we wouldn't probably, that would need checking out first. So have you got any other thoughts on what you could have as that you'd want information about players on using a QR code?
They could have like an OnlyFans section you could subscribe to.
And
that would generate probably more money than, you know, Jordy Crowther's shirt number.
Oh dear. So yeah, that was my little it's fucking stupid. Absolutely fucking stupid. I have got something else in a second. I just wanted to mention.
I'm 100% behind you on the 1-13 or 1-17. I wouldn't give no numbers to the substitutes, Rob. No, I can't go that far.
No numbers.
I like that.
I have a funny feeling Pat Pouarze never had a number because he never had a shirt big enough for him. So I think they just stuck him in a non-numbered shirt for a long time.
I always think that's an urban myth when I hear that. You know. We missed a bit of news out, and this is my other thought of the week. I'm going to go a bit random here, but Bradford and Lee have announced that they're going to play in Las Vegas next year. So that's going to be a great weekend. Have you gone to depression? But I did think.
I thought it was Wakefield Trinity as well.
I don't know, but who gives a shit? But if it's Bradford and Lee, I did think to myself, if I was the NRL invested, I would actually film it in Blackpool. That was just my random thought of the week. I've left Rob quite depressed.
Oh God.
Predictions.
We can predict the future or resist the inevitable urge to try.
Good afternoon to you. Earlier on today, apparently a woman rang the BBC and said she heard that there's a hurricane on the way. Well, if you're watching, don't worry, there isn't.
Predict Warrington, but can I do it with a caveat, please?
One game to predict as Wire this weekend host the Bradford Bulls in a good old-fashioned traditional 3 o'clock Sunday match. Now, we've had a few bets while we've been away, boys, and I can say now that I have lost 3.8% of my fortune. Dennis' wealth depreciated 14.9%. Sam has nosedived an additional 24.1% of his dwindling pittance. So, I mean, you need to pull your head in, Sam. You owe the bank money from last year. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? He's our statistician, right? But he's coming last in the mastermind game and he's heavily bankrupt. And he still comes back every week with these stats. I mean, I don't know what it's about, but, oh, dear. Is it loyalty? Is it just incompetence? I'm not sure what it is.
Incompetence, mainly.
Yeah, okay, excellent. So you might as well go first then, Sam. Show us your incompetence.
So my incompetence is Warrington have played 5-1-5 at home, average score 37-4-10 against. Bradford away are an average score of 19.4-36 against. So this is a shoo-in for Warrington by 40 points. Oh, I'm going Warrington to win with £90 and £4 on Josh Thewlis to score first.
Just leave 64 pence in the bank, Sam.
That's exactly what I've done. I've just left enough pence to...
And you're spelling Thewlis the AI way or the correct way, just to make sure we've got... Either.
Whichever one plays.
Dennis, I mean, off the back of those statistics, and let's face it, take them with a pinch of salt, looking at his money at the moment, are you going to jump on board?
Well, you know what? I'm not going to put much on the bet of a wire win. There's a fiver there. And yes. Liam Byrne is definitely going to come good. I think he had a bit of an off game, lots of tackles. But this one, I can see £15 of try against Bradford.
It's a bit like a Leaf fan in Vegas, isn't it? You go there with all the best intentions early on in the night. You're just putting a few little bets here and there. And now it's like 3 in the morning. You fucking no idea what time it is because there's not a window in the place. And now you're betting heavily.
You're drinking zero gin.
Practically put the entire terrace on a bet. That's with it. All right.
Yes.
Right. Well,
you're doing the same. Go on.
I am going to have £1,000 on Warrington to win. And I'm going to have King. King just keeps scoring. I went off King and I didn't have King. So I'll have £25 on a King try. So we're all basically in agreement here that this is an easy win for us, Sam. I think we've got Hull the following week.
Yes.
And then it starts getting a little bit prickly, doesn't it? Then we might just want to hold off on that Burgess contract because I think we've got Saints, Wigan, Hull KR, Catalans. There's a bit of a sticky run coming up.
I've got them in the order here. Saints, Leeds, Catalans, Lee, Wigan, Hull KR,
ooh.
Lee again.
Ooh.
So
ooh.
Now we've got St. Helens away, but then we've got, for me, the big game is then Leeds at home. So I make with this Warrington team, you can't assume, but you've got to say if we're going to do anything this year, we must win two home games against Bradford and Hull. Hull will probably be a bit better in 3 weeks' time than they've been because they've been shit. But then, yes, Saints, Leeds, Catalans, Lee away, Wigan away, Hull KR home, Lee away again. That's where we will make or break our fourth place finish.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Okay, that's it. We'll be back in early June after the Cup final. So until then, it's a put the primrose and blue ribbons back in the cupboard. So long from Sam.
All the best.
A vigorous polishing of his rusty old trophy, ta-ra, from Dennis.
Best seeing you.
And an abide with me, goodbye from me. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say? I'd go Tanya Arnold, by the way.
I think I was Gina Brooks.